find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hi, this is Bruce Valance, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, everybody. Welcome on back to Verbal Shenanigans, episode 302.
Ooh,
we got a good one for you today. I know we've been on a roll here up at the Shenanigans hideout, if you will. So
every time we get a guest, we're like, can we do better? Like, yeah, let it ride.
Yeah. And then we get...
Eventually, we're going to get bankrupt.
We've gotten bankrupt a few times over the last few weeks, but hopefully those will never see the light of day.
Point taken. That's the good thing about being taped.
it's the good thing about having full control over your podcast. You're not... when you don't belong to anybody, or you don't belong to a company or a show, or don't get paid, but we'll ignore that part.
We don't answer to the man. The man listens to us. You understand me?
You are correct. The man, the individual guy, his name is Dom, and that's basically it. it would not be a Verbal Shenanigans podcast if I wasn't sprinting, no matter what, off all day today, if I wasn't sprinting at the time when we were supposed to start. We're actually supposed to start about a half hour ago, and... I am, of course, I'm showing up covered in paint, blood, and a whole lot of sweat. So it wouldn't be
you
a podcast.
You really have
it.
Weird art styles. I have to tell you that.
I'm a Renaissance man. I'm a Renaissance man.
I know when you do doggy in-house, you really don't have to slice your hand open for the photo. I don't think people are that dedicated to your art, my man.
I'm realistic, man. I'm real. I try to, you know, really put it out there. All colors, all mediums, if you will. I use any medium, my blood, my paint, my stool, whatever I got to do.
Yeah. I mean, bodily liquids, I don't really see it going to the loo, my friend. I mean, maybe it's just me. Maybe you're trying to design a new art style, but
you're just not an artist, bro.
To draw first before you put your bodily fluids into it.
You're just not an artist, man. You just don't appreciate the high art that I bring to this show, and I don't feel appreciated. So,
dude, I have the painting hanging in my room right here. It's circles. There's nothing really to it. All you did was put some blood in a smear into a circle. I'm still trying to figure out why I brought it with me to Georgia.
Just remember, if that was like Da Vinci's blood, that would sell for like $250,000.
Yeah, but a key caveat to this, not Da Vinci.
Well, Da Vinci started somewhere, right? Maybe 100 years from now, they'll be like, oh, that's an original Brennan. Like, we'll test the DNA. You know, it's full of paint and beer, and it's definitely an original Brennan.
And it's depressing, so it's definitely Scott Brennan material.
Yeah, it's like, as always, every project I do in the house, I always think, I've knocked that out in an hour, and, you know, 2 hours. And then, like, 5 or 6 hours goes by, and I'm still not done. I just finished about 5 minutes ago. And did not even take the time to clean myself up for you guys today. But I apologize.
You still look pretty to me, Scott, here over on our Google Hangout.
Thanks, pal.
The key thing.
Thanks, pal. So, if you're just tuning into the show, welcome. Welcome aboard. We are a weekly. We've been twice a week lately. We might go back to once a week. I don't know. Who knows? While we're inside, we're enjoying putting out two a week. We're clearing out some of our inventory, if you will. We've hit the gas pedal very hard on scheduling interviews during this, to a point where we got like 6 or 7 episodes kind of in the tank already, at least interviews. So we're cranking them out, and we got a good one today, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But we are a weekly show. We basically bring on an interesting guest every single week, and we also just it's kind of like a radio show. We kind of like to call it like a radio show type of podcast here. So welcome aboard, everybody.
Now, going back to what you were talking about, like, do you get excited with like little home projects?
Yes and no. Now, the project I've been doing the last couple weeks involves a lot of painting. And painting is not my favorite thing in the world. It's just something that takes time. I don't consider myself a great painter. I get a little antsy halfway through, and kind of like that's when I start to try to get – that's where I get a little sloppy.
Okay.
And like before I know it, I'm spending time cleaning the spots off the floor, and then I'm missing the edges or hitting the ceiling or and this was a project where we were doing a whitewash on the wall, on the shiplap wall or whatever. So the we had to water the paint down like 50%. So it's really like – kind of messy, you know, like it's real watery. So the spots everywhere, and it's like it takes forever to paint just a small spot because it doesn't really cover much. So needless to say, it took a long time. But I like house projects. I like outdoor projects when it's nice out and not like insanely hot. I don't mind doing them. I don't mind a little landscaping. I don't mind building something. I really don't mind. But I would say raking leaves and painting are two I really don't get excited about.
See, I just get so much angst doing like stuff around the house. Like, I've never been like the handy guy, and I'm always prepared for doing like the one stupid thing. Now, to my record, I've never done like something just like catastrophic, but even just
like blow your house down.
That has not occurred yet, but like even just like hanging something on the wall, I have like my blood pressure goes up, and I'm like, I know I'm gonna screw something up. I know like my dad's gonna come one day and just be like shaking his head and looking at me like, this is what I produce.
This is
the son of me.
I feel that way around my dad because he's like ultimate handy. But I'm definitely like more handy than my brother, or at least more willing to give things a shot. Like I'll do something and then mess up and be like, all right, I gotta ask for help. But I'm usually pretty open. Anything but electrical. Like I don't know anything about electrical, and I wish I did. So, but I'm pretty open to things. I would say my skills have improved very much so over the last few years.
See, I mean, this is the thing where I'm getting hindered by this whole pandemic thing. Like, I'm okay if like my dad is right there to kind of coach me, like let me do everything, but it's literally like, no, you want to do this and that. Like, there's stuff around the house I know I gotta get to, but like I know I don't have skills. Like yesterday, the brakes are going on my riding lawnmower.
Okay.
And I
you have a ride on lawnmower? I'm jealous.
Yeah, but there's something definitely going wrong with the clutch in or brake, and I put it up on a jack, and I'm sticking my head under this thing to try to figure out, and Lord knows I'm saying to myself, there's no way on earth, like, you can't put enough bad odds on me trying to figure out what is wrong with this thing. You know, there's that it is like, that is the closest thing to manliness. It's just, it's like, well, I put it on the on the jack. I tried to see something up there, and
so
even like looking at videos, I'm like, no, I have no clue. There's no way I'm gonna figure this out.
So like, you're more of a hire someone to do things kind of guy.
Don't
do anything.
I don't hire people. Like, I even like did the lawn for the most part with it without the brakes. It wasn't a huge hindrance, but like, I know it's on its way out, and I don't. I talked to my brother, and he thinks it's just like an easy cable change, but it's unless I got somebody there, there's no possibility it's going to occur.
Yeah, see, I think you get a. I think if you just like, I think it all just comes with like doing things. Like if you do it and you keep, you know, you continue to do it. Especially nowadays, I feel like you could find like pretty good tutorials on almost anything. Like anything I'm confused about, I do some research and I'm usually able to figure it out. But
like what was like the biggest thing you figured out on your own?
I just did this like shiplap wall project with my dad, and I had measured it all out and figured out what it would need and what would be the best way to get it on the wall and how to split, you know, it wasn't how to cut them and make sure they fit and keep them level. So I thought that was a pretty good one.
What was it called again?
It's like shiplap. It's like planking on one wall. Like it looks kind of like almost boards. I'll have to show you a picture of it.
Yeah, but I'm drawing a blank here. Like
a
shiplap. I just think you're putting up nautical stuff on your wall.
No, it's kind of got honesty. It's kind of got that look. Almost like a cabin in a way, like a cabin wall.
Okay.
But yeah, it came out pretty good. It was so that took a while, but I don't know. I'm not completely dumb when it comes to home stuff. I wouldn't call myself great, but I generally give everything the old college try.
I do try. I give it a shot. Like I was able to change my starter on my grill. Like that was like and all I did was like remove like four screws and plug it in. But it's still like it was like I built a log cabin. That's the kind of glee that I had from changing the starter on the grill, you know?
Yeah, I find a lot of it is never as bad as you think it's going to be. Like, you do it, and you're like, oh, all right, that wasn't too hard. Like, you build the anxiety up, like, I can't do that. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to blow something up. Then you realize a lot of it's, like, just putting stuff back where it was, you know, it was. Like, putting screws. So, I do find that. I don't know. I've had been doing that, and just last week, I said, do you invest money at all? Like in stocks?
I need to. I mean, outside of a 401k, no. But yeah. I know I need to have like a side hustle out there.
Yeah, I'm trying. Like many years ago, I was in it a little bit. You know, never made any major money, a couple hundred bucks here and there. And I kind of got out of it. I didn't pay attention to it anymore. But now, like, I don't know. I've been addicted the last week and a half. I got, you know, like a friend tells me, like, oh, I bought this stock. I put $3,000 in, and I pulled out, you know, $7,000 in like 2 days because it doubled. I'm like, wow. So I was like, oh, I'll check it out. And you know, I put in $500 total into the market, but it's pretty addicting, man. Like I bought a couple things, and there's like now with the, you know, the internet and the apps, it's just constant. You can constantly keep track of everything, and there's like message boards of people telling you where things are going and what. It's pretty good, man. I mean, I'm sure it'll all come crashing down because that's just the way it is for me. But let's see, over this week, I'm up 46% from what I invested.
Do you feel like a Jim Cramer thing? Like you just want to go on the show and start hitting some sound effects?
Yeah, bow, bull, bull, bull. You know, I don't know, man. It's kind of like gambling, but like maybe a little safer because you can pull it out, you know, whenever you want. Like you don't have to lose it all. It's pretty interesting, but like when you're doing well, you feel like you know what you're doing, but then you read like message boards of what people are doing and I have zero idea what these words mean and what things are. The stock market feels like this imaginary thing. Like, oh, I just put this money in and it grows or shrinks and then I get money or I lose money. Like, I don't know. It's strange. Like you bet on football or baseball, you see the game. Stocks is just these random numbers, you know?
It's never clear on, like, the full down. Like, it's not – like, I still don't know why Enron is gone, to be brutally honest. I know that was, like, a big thing. But, like, if you put a gun to my head and what happened, I'm like, it went bye-bye. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, the one I'm – there's two I'm investing in right now. I mean, there's a couple, but very minimal. The one is it's like a spa in an airport that is, they're getting like contracts to do coronavirus testing before flights and whatnot and after flights. So like you get, you know, see if you habit, which I assume is going to be pretty big over the next few months at least anyway. So if they get these big contracts, like that one's been doing all right. And then the other one was is a company that's making body cams, like big orders of body cams and stuff like that for police. And like they just got a big order in from like the Kansas City police. So I don't know. They've both been doing really well. I'm sure I'll report back on Thursday when we podcast and tell you I lost everything.
Yeah. So, Scott, I'm so sorry they found the cure.
Yeah.
Son of a... Who knew it was aspirin?
You know, I've always wanted to kind of get involved a little bit, and I do find it very interesting, like trying to make money. So I feel like I put in $500, and if I can get that to like 1,000 or two, that would be pretty successful. But and if I could just pull out my 500, then it's all like play money.
There you go.
So yeah. I don't know, man. It's something I've been wanting to get involved in. But of course, it's like it's another thing on your phone to look at. So Facebook, mm-hmm. Instagram. I check out what the Mets blog. I look at what Liverpool's doing. And so it's like check my email, check my work email. You know, it's just another thing that you're buried in your phone all day.
Yeah, we really need to push this planet out a few million miles so we can get an extra 2 hours every day. You know,
yeah.
I don't know how you do the rotation, and we'll probably kill off like the southern hemisphere, but it'd be worth it to have that extra that 13th hour.
Yeah. What are you most addicted to on your phone? Mine would probably be, I check Facebook, and now the stock market thing is it has taken over. We'll see how long that lasts.
I guess YouTube would probably be my number one
because
I usually when I want to space out, I'll just space out, and that's the biggest time. I mean, Facebook is obviously up there. I try to keep up on Untappd just to see the drinks out there. You know, lately I've been like friending random people who've done like thousands of beers, and like even a guy like messaged me. He's like, I don't mind, but why are we friends? And I'm like, well, I don't know you. I'm just curious of what you drink. So
you're beer friends now. You're making beer. Yeah. You're making beer friends out there. So now you have another community of people you're going to piss off somehow.
Yeah, we call ourselves Sudsies. It's our buddies.
Sudsies. You know.
Yeah.
So you're like, will you be my Suddy? And he's like, he declines or accepts.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're killing it over there and with your studies. But
yeah, it's a good thing, you know. And of course, Pokemon Go. I still got to catch them all.
Do you actually play that?
No, I don't do that.
A lot of grown men play it. I've never played it, but I know a lot of people did at one point. I don't know. I don't even know if that's a big thing anymore. It was huge for a few minutes.
Oh, yeah. I remember I was over at your house. We were trying to find one, and we couldn't get it on the app. But
you were trying to find a Pokemon?
Yeah, we did. I did it as like a bet.
Oh.
Like I installed it, and I'm like, let's walk around your house and see if we can find anything. Now it's a studio, so we walked 10 steps, and I'm like, well, that was fun.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Sometimes I just like the phone, man. It's so valuable and so evil at the same time. It's like it's the worst thing and the best thing ever. Like it's like, wow, all this amazing information at the tips of my fingers in 2 seconds. And then it's like, and then I don't know if your phone, do you get that screen time report? Like it'll be like, your screen time for the week was that. And you're like, oh my God.
I don't even bother getting an answer. Whatever it is, I'll just be saddened by myself.
It's bad, man. It's bad. I'm like, damn. But I feel like a lot of my time, I try to like validate my time and try to myself, like, well, a lot of my time was, I was looking up, I was looking up stocks. I was reading about something that I would have read up in the paper. So it's the same thing. But I don't know, man. It's bad. It's a life sucking device. That's for sure.
I think the only way to solve stuff is we got to go back to kind of like the old school 900 number kind of pricing, if you will. It's like you can use your phone and like the first 5 minutes it'll be 99 cents, but after that you're SOL, and then you get the bill and you're like, what the
yeah I don't know, man. It's There's times I just want to throw the phone out the window and like reset and just like go off the grid for a while. But then it's like,
then you do something cool and you're like, oh my God, but I have to tell somebody.
Exactly. Or I got to see what other people are doing, or what are people crying about today? What are people angry about?
Going back to what I just said, did you ever get in trouble for like calling those like 900 numbers or anything like that?
No, when I was young, I thought it was really funny. Like me and my friend would use the payphone and we'd call 411 and like be like, I'm trying to get some information on it. And we'd make up like a restaurant. We'd be like, RD's Naked and Eat, where you're allowed to eat. And we thought it was like hilarious. It really wasn't funny. But
some 50-year-old man's just like, look, bro, I gotta kill time anyway, so get your chuckles out, you little 3-year-old.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I don't think I ever really called too many 900 numbers that I remember. You?
I think at one time I get hit once and on, and if I recall, one that was like the DJ Jazzy Jeff 900 number. And like I even remember like not even thinking of like the cost per minute, like it was literally like a 3-minute thing with Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, and it would just repeat, and I would still just like hanging on like, well, maybe they'll say something new the next minute, and they'll just keep repeating the same thing.
Oh, that's bad.
So like, yeah, my dad was not too thrilled when that first bill came.
Hey, Mike, you read Jazzy Jeff. God, that's like as bad as calling like Miss Cleo or something like that. That's pretty bad.
It wasn't even anything important. They weren't like talking about, oh, we're working on our next album. I think they were like talking about, yo, I'm going to go get a burger. Yeah, that sounds good. And there was nothing of value, but like as a 10, 11-year-old, it's like, oh my God, I'm listening to the Fresh Prince on the phone.
Well, I'm glad it was worth it. Is Jazzy Jeff still alive?
Is he still alive?
No, we gotta get Jazzy Jeff on the show.
He still does stuff here and there with Will Smith.
But. Yeah, we're gonna try to get Jazzy Jeff on the show. But Berlo, I think it is that segue into guest time, and we got a really cool guest tonight. People should recognize this guy. Who we got?
Scott, tonight we're going to be talking with comedy writers, songwriter, actor, been in the business since the 70s, been a writer for some of our biggest names, and you might remember him from being on the Hollywood Squares. Tonight we're going to be talking with the one and only Bruce Valanche.
Bruce Valanche, you recognize those glasses, you should recognize that hair, and if you saw our Instagram, we put a little teaser out there. You had to guess who was going to be our guest on the show just from the picture. It was Bruce Valanche. So those of you who guessed Bruce Valanche, I will contact you on Instagram and get a shirt sent out to you. So without further ado, here's our interview with Bruce Valanche.
Hey, Bruce.
Bruce, what's going on?
Oh, good. I got haystack hair. Isolation haystack hair. Fabulous.
Isolation haystack hair. It's a great, great name for an album, I'll tell you that much.
Isn't it? Or a band altogether.
We are Isolation Haystack Hair. Good night. Thank you.
I hope you loved our retro ska album.
So Bruce, what's going on?
Where are you?
I'm in New Jersey, and
I'm from New Jersey.
I know. I was looking up some info on you. You're born in Paterson, right?
I was born in New York and taken to Paterson.
Oh, lucky you.
4 days. The first of many insults, yeah.
What so did you grow up in Jersey?
In Paterson, yeah.
Okay. How long did you grow up in Jersey?
17 years. Then the minute I went, I could get out, I did when I went to college. Once Jersey, always Jersey.
That's right.
And now, of course, you know, that I'm an older bride, all of the people who I grew up with were like finding each other thanks to the internet and isolation.
You can't get away.
And endless reunions. We can't stop reuniting. But nobody's in Paterson.
No.
Everybody's left.
Yeah. Yeah, and not too many people see it beginning and end in Patterson.
I know. It's gotten very Muslim now, actually.
Yeah.
Which is ironic.
Yeah.
It was very Jewish. It was very Jewish and Italian and Irish and Puerto Rican and Black. And now, I mean, everybody's gone except it's Muslim. Now, where are you in Jersey?
I'm in Denville, New Jersey. So,
oh, that's pretty.
Yep. Right next to Booten, yep. Booten's like up the street from me. And then Mike he's in Georgia now, but he's also originally a Jersey boy.
Originally Jersey, yeah. South Brunswick, New Egypt, Flanders. Yeah. I was all around.
That's the Philly end of Jersey.
Yeah.
It's the New York end and the Philly end.
Yeah, the end we don't like.
I was growing up, it was in one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hit all three sections of Jersey.
We would all meet down the shore. That was the only place that was like neutral turf was down the shore.
And where are you at right now?
I am in Hollywood, California, the sun and fun capital of the world, Sodom and Gomorrah, the Twin Cities, in my Hollywood man cave.
Nice.
I've only lived in this place, this condo, for about 3 years, but I've been out here for 100 years.
How have you been holding up in quarantine out there?
It's a guilty pleasure. I have every excuse, you know, not to wear pants. I've been looking for years for that.
I'd be disappointed if you had pants on right now during this interview. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. And you would be really disappointed.
Just don't stand up, please. Please don't stand up.
No, I'm just standing up. Are we in IMAX? I might just try it. Require a large lens.
Yeah, it's got to take off 3D glasses.
Right, yeah.
It might be dangerous. Bruce, one thing I found interesting, just like looking over everything about your career, writing and being on TV, I didn't see anything about stand-up on there. Have you ever went into that route?
But it's not. I don't call it stand-up. I call it sit-down. Even though, I mean, there's a stool, but I'm not a club comic. I mean, I've experimented with that, and it's not for me. The energy is wrong. I come in and I tell stories and talk about my career and various things that have happened. And so it's much more of a theatrical thing when I do it. I do a one-man show, but I'd much rather do it in theaters. I only tried it in clubs a couple of times just because I had to prove to my agents that it was not a good fit. Because, you know, you make money in clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make money in theater too, but I mean, you know, people who are actual stand-ups just do clubs. And I do a show with Judy Gold, who is a stand-up. She's a club comic.
Yeah.
It's, you know, every night. And it's so funny. We call the show Big and Tall, and, you know, she's tall. And the contrast is kind of amazing because she goes on and she just wears them down, and then I come on and pick up the remains. I'm so calming compared to her. There's just so glad they're no longer under the gun when I get out there. There is stand up, but it's not, you know, been the basis of anything.
Mm.
It came late. It came later. I was always an actor and a writer, and then I just started after Hollywood Squares. I was doing a lot of benefits and stuff, but after Hollywood Squares, when I became somebody who was on TV every night, I began getting all these ridiculous offers to go out and do a show. So I put a show together and did it. And now it's been 20 years of that to add to my resume. What 20 years of before, you know, but.
What about like your early life as like a kid in high school? Were you into acting and writing then?
Yeah, I was into show business from as long as anybody can remember.
Yeah,
my parents said I learned to read the ads, the show business, the movie ads in the paper. You know, I could go, oh, Mitzi Gaynor, I could read that. And so I became that. It was what I was going to do. So I was a child actor, but I wasn't a child star, or we'd be having this conversation in rehab. I did a bunch of commercials and stuff in New York, and then I was always acting, but I was heavy. I had a deep voice, and I was born 40. I looked much older. And so I was going into audition opposite actors who had been around forever. and I knew I was not going to get cast. So I started writing about what I was doing, and I began getting offers for to write stories for magazines and things. So when I went to college, I declared a journalism and theater major, and when I got out, I took a job at the Chicago Tribune, and was a writer and doing acting on the side. And in Chicago, I met Bette Midler, who was just starting out, and I began writing for her. And then I, you know, hitched my star to her wagon. Or hitched my wagon to her star, I forget it.
Right, right.
Wind beneath my wings, wings beneath my wind. I can't remember which is which.
Now, what was your introduction to her? Like, when was it, were you like a critic writer? Or I just was. Like,
so I went to review her, actually. I had, she was on Broadway in Fiddler on the Roof, one of the daughters. And she would do a nightclub act after the show down the street at a club called Hilly's, and then at the Improv. And the guy who ran the Improv was also her manager, and he was a friend of mine. I was a journalist. I was a feature writer in Chicago, and I was writing about show business and people who came through. So he'd had a couple of clients I'd written about. And he called me and said, I'm sending this girl out there to open at a club. There was a famous nightclub called Mr. Kelly's, which was a very hip room. And she was... he was going to open there. And he said, go, if you like her, write something about her. So I went to see her. And she opened for a comic named Jackie Vernon, who is no longer with us. He was a deadpan comic. Now he's just a dead comic. But he was a deadpan comic. He was he had, you know, that face that never moved. And he would say, when I was a kid, I was unwanted. Now I'm wanted in 13 states. And it was... His act was kind of like that. It was, but it built, you know. Mm. And he had a following, and they came to see him, and she opened for him, and she came out. I will never forget it. She came out wearing capri pants and toreador pants and high heel shoes from the 40s, and she had a blouse. That was a tie open down and tied at the waist and no bra.
Yeah.
At the time was considered a feminist political statement.
Right.
And I told her that in her case, it was a terrorist act. And a lot of hair and a gardenia in her hair. And she came out singing Shaboom, which had been a big hit. Shaboom, Shaboom, yada, and shaking, you know, checking her jugs. And the audience kind of went, huh? Because his crowd was like not ready for this, you know, but she was hysterical. I mean, she was funny, and her material was such a witty selection of stuff. You know, it was it was the 1970, and it was 50 years ago. It was there was a heavy nostalgia craze going on.
Yeah,
it was a period of singer-songwriters, and the other thing was rediscovering things from the 30s and the 40s that. And she was the progenitor of that. She discovered things that were considered trash, and rock and roll songs like Do You Want to Dance that were considered trash, and she turned them into art. She turned them into beautiful things, into things that were worth listening to,
right,
and performing. And that was, I thought that was unbelievably smart. I mean, I'd never seen anybody... Barbara Streisand had done that at the very beginning of her career, and then she kind of abandoned it because she became a megastar in 10 minutes. But and that took 20 minutes. So clearly, these girls were onto something.
So now you went on to have a pretty long stint with Hollywood Squares, both in it and writing for it. How do you balance? You know, whether it's the day you're on the show or like writing for the show, do you not know, like, you know, some of the topics and questions when you're going to be a contestant? Like, how did that work?
Well, we never, the stars, the Squares never knew the answers.
Right.
And the contestants were told that because if, you know, the way the game works, it's all a hunch, you know, the question and the star gives an answer and the contestant figures out whether he's telling the truth or not,
yeah,
or knows what he's talking about. So if they feel that the stars have the answers, they'll agree every time, and there'll be no game.
Right.
So So it was very important that the stars not know the answers. Now, we all saw the questions, and of course I'd seen them before because I was the head writer, and we gave people jokes. In addition, we give everybody a bluff answer so they wouldn't look like they were completely stupid, but they would have that. They would, you know, pretty much on their own sometimes. But they also, we gave them the ones who we thought could handle a joke. We gave a joke,
right?
And so that was how that worked. When I was on, I mean, I would review it like all the other, like the eight other people who were going to be up in squares, because I was in charge of giving. Of the comedy. And the idea at the beginning was to make it more of a comedy than a game show. Because as a game show, it wasn't, you know, the stakes were not all that gripping. And there wasn't like those classic game shows like Millionaire where there's exciting music.
Yeah.
And, you know, cheering crowds and all that. No, it was fun. It was watching nine people carry on. And it had been a big hit. When I remember the first one that we did, Whoopi wanted me to be the host, and they thought that was a stupid idea, but they didn't want to piss her off that early in the game, so they tested me, and they said, well, you know, I was up there going, and this one's for the win, Kevin, and they said, you know, we'd like somebody who's a little bit mainstream, but not quite as off as you are, so but we'd like to put you in a square. We like your energy. So they put me in the square, and I think they figured I would tame her. They put me next to her, but of course that was a bad idea because the two of us were having too much fun. Anyways, the first day we got on, we were climbing up the stairs, the spiral staircase to get to our square, and I said to her, "Well, it's ours to fuck up. It's been a hit every 14 years it ran
right
on NBC with Paul Lynde, and then." It came back for 5 years with Joan Rivers, and this ours was version three. And so I said, you know, it works. If it doesn't work, it's not their fault. It's totally on us. Then it worked. We did 6 years of it.
Yeah.
Now, being a writer as long as you have, I mean, you kind of brought up a point about like understanding the people you're giving jokes to. Like, how often? When you write something and you're like, man, that's funny, do you have to sit back and go, oh, but can this person pull this off or not? Like, is it generally the people you're working with good enough, or is there times where you're really like, I got to think this through before I hand it in?
Well, on a show like Squares, when you were working with comics, you knew that they could sell it. That was, you knew Gilbert Gottfried would find a way to be funny, and Caroline Ray would find a way to be funny, and Brad Garrett would find a way to be funny, and Penn and Teller. But then there were people who aren't comedians, and they would sometimes get the biggest laughs because it was unexpected. You know, you're not sure Garth Brooks is going to be able to land this joke. But Garth, he's actually a very funny guy. You just have to write it in the correct rhythm for him to do it. And I found that was basically how we got through it. And also, if it wasn't too jokey, sometimes, you know, they weren't funny, and it wasn't worth it because they would screw it up. They would try to make it funny, and they would just
screw it up.
You know, Little Richard, who just passed and was hysterical, came in. We would shoot five shows a day. We did it on a weekend. We would do a week in a day. So we'd come in Saturday morning and do like at 10 o'clock and do three shows, and then have lunch and get drunk and do the last two shows. They were always much looser, the Thursday and Friday shows. And Little Richard came in, and I always would go in and meet with everybody just to go over their material. And he came in, and the first thing he said to me was, "I don't know nothing. I know nothing. You have to tell me everything." And he wasn't kidding. Everything we had to explain. I mean, he lived in his own universe, you know, and it was a small but very excitable universe. And so I would just kind of say, just anything. Why don't you just say that? Yeah. Why not that you're running gag? It's like, I don't know this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It will be your thing because no one's expecting you to, you know. And so many of these questions on Hollywood Squares were like, they weren't really, they didn't have real answers, a lot of them. You know, they were, according to Dr. Joyce Brothers, who was, right. if you remember her, that mm-hmm. she was a very, you know, one of the early TV shrinks. And see, any question that started with, according to Dr. Joyce Brothers, didn't have a real answer because it was whatever the hell Joyce thought about it.
Right.
And so how are you supposed to know what Joyce thinks?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a hunch. She would say, well, I think Joyce would say. So it's a, and so the contestant had to decide if it was reasonable. Well, you know, Little Richard's version of what Joyce Brothers thinks, diametrically opposed to anything Joyce Brothers has ever said. So that yeah. made for a good time. And that was what a lot of it was strategic comedy plotting.
Yeah.
More than actual writing.
Well, it definitely worked. I mean, it had a pretty, pretty damn long run. Now,
it was great when they tried to turn it into more of a game show. It was when it began losing audience because that was the period where Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was the runaway number one show on television.
Yeah,
and so there were a million quiz shows, and this they got swept up. The people who were syndicating it got swept up in the mania, and they tried to turn it into more of a quiz show, which was a big mistake. Yeah. They upped the ante on the prizes, and you know tried to add fake drama to it. And nothing killed it faster than that.
Yeah, it's like a lot of times when they try to change, you know, mess with what works, it always kind of alters the direction of a show or just loses something.
Yeah.
How did you eventually hook up with like writing for the Oscars and then like becoming like the most important writer for the Oscars? How did that even happen?
It was actually before that. I had written unofficially for people who were on the show who didn't like what they got or didn't trust
right.
that people would get their rhythm. And after a few years of that, a guy named Alan Carr came to produce the show, and he was going to just radically change everything. And one of the things he was doing was he decided he'd bring me in because I had written for a lot of his clients who were Vegas acts.
Right.
And
right.
so that's how I got the gig. And it was the infamous year of Snow White, Rob Lowe dancing with Snow White, and Disney sued, you know, because they in their minds they think they invented Snow White, which of course they didn't.
Yeah,
and so that was dismissed. But it was it's a long and hysterical story, which will be in the book I am writing now here in isolation.
All right,
and come back on the Michael Curler Show and plug my ass. That's the wrong expression.
Yeah, yeah. That sounded a little different, but no.
However, so the following year, they decided they were going to go to something a bit more conventional, and they brought in a man named Gil Cates, who was a big director, and he produced the show for 17 times. Wow. And he brought me in to write on it each time, and he went. There had been no host on that the first year, and they brought in Billy Crystal to host it. He hosted the Grammys, three or four times, and so I was on board with that, and I stayed. And Billy did it eight times, and I did it with him, and then with other people too. So I wound up doing 23 of them,
wow.
where I was actually credited, and I was a head writer sometimes, and sometimes somebody else was the head writer. It depended on who the host was. And then since then I do something for the show every year,
yeah.
because people tend to come to me on the week of the show and say, can you fix this?
What is that environment like for writing? Is that like a pressure cooker environment? Like, is it
yeah.
intense or is it like,
absolutely. Yeah. It's live television, and it's kind of like, you know, for the kind of stuff I do, it's like the Super Bowl. It's like, you know, you don't want to fumble in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And you know, 100 million people are watching it, and there's a lot of grandstanding going on. And you know, all these football metaphors keep coming home.
Well, I mean, you seem like a real football guy.
I mean, I think that's fun, you know. I mean, I think it's fun when something goes wrong and you can capitalize on it. The great part is if you have a host who is game and can run with it. It's difficult to find people to host that show because if there's a very short list of people who are eligible.
Yeah.
They have to be very famous.
Especially and, now, right? Like, yeah, everybody's offended by everything you say. So I feel like...
Well, now that's why they've done it without one, because the last one to go through that was Jimmy Kimmel.
Yep.
And he did a great job twice, but that's like... nobody wants... Anybody who's that rich and that famous doesn't need this show. They won't get the money as they get for other things. And if they do well, people will say, that was fine.
Yeah.
And if they don't do well, it sticks with them forever. You know, you can never get the stink off of it if you don't do well, because so many people see it. So a lot of people just say, I don't want to get in my own way. That's what
I'll happen. Yeah. I mean, that's why I think Ricky Gervais
just... rely on people who are... who relish the challenge, the imp of the perverse.
That's why I think seeing Ricky Gervais do what he did last year was so refreshing. It was like, you know.
Well, yeah, that's the Golden Globes, which is a pie throw.
Right.
It's everybody shows up because it's on the way to the Oscars.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's like, you know, running Keeneland before the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah. So, it was still refreshing.
And yeah, and I mean, it's the whole idea of the Golden Globes is kind of a kind of classic. I mean, it's voted on by 88 wine stewards and valet parkers who are pretending they're foreign journalists while they're studying for their real estate license. And so, you know, and everybody gets wined and dined, and it's a crazy system. And they stack the deck by adding the movies and television simultaneously. So almost every category is an acting category. So they have 24 famous faces getting up and winning awards. And all the movie people show up because if they win, they want to be there to impress the Academy voters, who are not Golden Globe voters, I would like to point out. So that's why the show has that, and it can accommodate that. I mean, and they're also all sitting at the tables drunk. You know, the Academy, I mean, this is the 92nd year of this thing, and something like that at least. And it was founded by people who actually make movies and have an investment in recognizing the work of their peers, because it started when everybody was considered you know, a monkey, the monkey grinder's monkey. You're
great analogies.
That's why it doesn't change. That's why they think that the sound effects editing guy is as important as the leading lady. So everybody has to get their moment.
Yeah.
Now, do you set up who goes up to present for jokes? Because it always seems like there's always like some weird matchup where it's like Brad Pitt and the puppet from the Saw movies or something like that.
Well, he escaped that, but that would be a funny one. And I am consulted. The writer, I always was consulted. There is a talent booker who's a talent director. I don't know what they keep changing the title to make it sound better. And the producer. And, of course, everybody's. We're always – there's a team that's consulted on that stuff. And generally when you have – you know, you have all of these awards that no one cares about, and they're going to be accepted by nerds, basically – and who are going to give going to start thanking their Hebrew school teacher and things like that. So it's the only way you can keep attention from the audience is to put movie stars out there and people who they want to see. And so often it's a bad marriage between a celebrity personality and a category. But sometimes the things, you know, the ones that are jokey or deliberate, you know, when you have somebody who's funny, you try to put him out there in a situation that can be amusing. And one of the reasons that they have animated things is because it's a huge part of the industry. So you have to have, you know, Buzz Lightyear and that kind of stuff. Shrek has to give an award.
yeah.
Because that's part of the movie year as well. And then sometimes, you know, you get very lucky and you have comedians who are willing to risk it, like Ben Stiller and Will Ferrell and Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, people who are willing to go out there and commit to makeup and commit to characters and things like that. But a lot of the time it's people who are just don't have a stage persona. You know, Johnny Depp, Keanu Reeves. These guys don't have a character. They don't go to clubs and go, "Hey, folks,
yeah,
how about that phone company?"
Yeah, yeah,
they got to come up. I mean, Johnny Depp. It's interesting to see has come up with a Johnny Depp character. He can be on talk shows.
Yeah,
I mean. He never used to have that.
Playing a version of himself, almost.
Yeah, yeah. It's exactly right. It's a character. But, you know, like one very embarrassing year, we thought Keanu could do something in his Bill and Ted character. And I don't think he was alone. I think he very game, but it was a mistake. Because those are characters you can't take out of context, you know.
Yeah.
As opposed to you could put I think we had Wayne and Garth one year as Wayne, you know,
yeah,
Mike Myers and Dana Carvey as Wayne and Garth. But that made sense. It was like Wayne and Garth are at the Oscars, you know, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of, I think one of the
I like to say it's a banter free zone. You know, we don't want to have people out there who are uncomfortable being out there trying to pretending that they're, you know, having a good time.
Yeah.
Making little jokes. That's other shows do that. I've written other shows and they've wanted that. On the Oscars, it's kind of, there's been a conscious pushback away from
that. You were speaking of animated things, and I thought it was, I really wanted to ask you, I can't believe it was almost 20 years ago, but you were on The Simpsons. You were animated into an episode of The Simpsons.
Episode 11. Year 11.
Which is so crazy to even say, like, 20 years ago when it was 10 years in, you know, like, it's just amazing.
Staggering.
What was that like being in a cartoon like that? Like, what was the process like?
It was incredible. It was the thing to do. And, I mean, everybody was doing it. And it was a great honor. I mean, I was on Hollywood Squares. And, of course, the thing they had me doing was sitting out in the mayor of Springfield making a speech. And he does a joke that doesn't land. And he says, "Thank you, Bruce Valanche." And they cut to me saying, "Well, it's funny when Whoopi did it." And of course, I have red hair and a Fred Flintstone T-shirt. And it was great for two reasons. One, I had to go in there and record one line.
Yeah.
It wasn't like isolation theater now where everything is Zoom. I had to go to the studio. And then I left with this trunk of Simpsons crap. And it's not, I say crap is that only in that it's Simpsons memorabilia and exclusive items that they never sold, that they only use as gifts for people who
are awesome.
Oh, wow.
And so, I mean, it's all, I still have it. I'm sure it's all very valuable, but it's like stuff I wouldn't let go. I have Homer Simpson's bowling ball. It's a bowling ball carrier. It's just Homer on it. With his face, and awesome. Then there's a ball inside. It looks like an egg yolk, and it has no holes in it.
Huh.
It has three red marks saying "drill holes here."
That's pretty great.
You know, like in Magic Marker, it's absolutely brilliant. So that was one thing that was wonderful about it. And the other thing was, as I was leaving from finishing my session, the next recording was coming in. It was Elizabeth Taylor, who was the voice of Maggie the baby, who I think said goo goo.
Yeah.
That was her one line.
Dada, I think it was.
Yeah, something like that. And I knew her because we did a lot of AIDS benefits because she was like the whole AIDS movement. And it was just so funny because I said, well, I'll never have a more Hollywood moment.
No. Yeah.
Running into Elizabeth Taylor as we're both doing a voiceover on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Doesn't get bigger than this.
No.
This is it. This is it. I'm going to assisted living immediately. There's nothing left. And it's 20 years later and I'm still farting around.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
That's awesome. Now, you have done so many things, you've won Emmys yourself. One thing I want to kind of bring up, because I kind of like it, but it's almost infamous now. Can you tell us a little bit about the Star Wars holiday special and your thoughts about it? Because everybody loves it on the internet, but it seemed like...
I do a whole routine about it in my show, so when I... Of course, can't give that away.
Right.
Probably on YouTube anyway, but it was to preface it by saying it was a surreal experience, but I was having plenty of those because it was 1977 and we were all chemically altered. And I mean, really, you know, Carrie Fisher and I, we would snort the sweet and low. we didn't care. We were just, oh, it looks like something. Let's do it. But it was, if we'd known that we were going to be talking about this thing 45 years later, we would have paid closer attention. It was one of many ridiculous variety specials that I was involved with because that was what they did. It was just before cable really wiped variety television out. And these were shows that were called appointment TV. People would tune in to watch them because the only place you could see anything like this was on that particular show, those specials. And then cable made, if you wanted to watch Madonna, she was on 24 hours a day on HBO. So the whole form kind of went away.
Yeah.
And you know, George had done, George Lucas, not sure, George had done, had made the first picture and there was the runaway success and he was about to start shooting The Empire. And he wanted to keep stirring the pot. Because it was, you know, before it was the beginning of the blockbuster era. Jaws was the first one a couple of years previous, but he wanted to make sure that the audience interest would remain. So he told me 10 Star Wars stories, and he had one was a novel, and one was animated, and one was this, and one was that, and there was one story left, and he sold that one to CBS as the basis of a special. Unfortunately, this story, the lead characters were the Wookiees.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
And the Wookiees speak no language known in this or any other universe, and you know they sound like fat people having orgasms. Trust me, I know. And so everything, and we were afraid of subtitles because people didn't read subtitles then. And that's ironic because now the last Star Wars movie, half of it was in subtitles because they're all speaking Ewok to each other or Klingon or whatever the hell they use on that in that particular universe. So we wound up doing this show with this weird storyline and with Harrison and Mark Hamill and Carrie in for one day. And George invented a holiday called Life Day that he thought would be like festive.
Yep.
Not so much. And it was a variety special, so we had to have a lot of other performers. So we had Diane Carroll, we had Jefferson Starship, Cirque du Soleil, Art Carney, Harvey Korman, B. Arthur. I mean, it was like, what are they doing? What's B. Arthur doing running the cantina on that? Anyway, it was a jovial mess, people watched it, and they were people who watched it were stoned and had a great time, and they said it's awful, it's horrible, but this is ridiculous. You know, this is there wasn't at the time a Star Wars religion,
right?
That came later. There were two more movies that created that, and then 20 years of internet. Where people who grew up watching Star Wars movies on VHS could become attached to the concept. And then George came back with three more movies and everything went through the roof. During this period, they discovered the Star Wars holiday special internet and they said, how did this happen? How did he betray us this way? Yeah. And for most of them, the only reason they even watched it was Boba Fett. Because it was the show that introduced Boba Fett.
Yep.
Because he had sold Boba Fett as a feature length, but I don't think they could do it. So they did a small animated piece of the show, and that was the legitimate reason why Star Wars people would seek it out. Yeah. But in the course of doing that, they would say, "Oh, George, what have you done?" And it got under his skin. He tried to like destroy it.
Yeah, he's big on that.
But of course, whenever you know you do that, whenever you try to kill a weed, it just gets bigger and bigger. And by the time the Phantom Menace came out, which was you know had its own problems, can we say Jar Jar Binks?
Yes.
We didn't come up with anything as odious as Jar Jar Binks. But It just got out of, it became a thing of its own. It became like the best, worst, bad thing.
Right. It's like The Room.
And, you know? and it's kind of like what's made Disney so rich. Every 5 years, there's a whole new generation of Star Wars kids.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Who watch the things that now they're watching them on their wrist devices.
Yeah.
But they get caught up in it and they get angry.
Well,
you have to have a 5-year-old angry at you for what you did to Princess Leia.
Oh man, Bruce, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. I could pick your brain all night long, and maybe we could have you on again in the future and talk about some other things. But so what are you working on these days, and
it's, everything is in development now because nothing is shooting because we're all in our huts. But yeah. I found a way. I'm writing a book, and the book is about how I survived all of these just hilariously bad television things and lived.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to just write another book about and then I wrote and then I did, and I can't really write and then I slept with, because even though many of them are dead, you really can't write that book until they're all gone. I think you can learn nothing else from that. It's that those kinds of books just only sell if they're if they're full of people that they can't complain.
Can't say it didn't happen. Yeah.
So I'm doing that and working on a bunch of other stuff. But, and it's all development, so I got nothing to plug. But believe me, the moment I do, I'll be back. I'll be away.
Awesome. Bruce, thank you so much. And stay safe out there in lockdown and quarantine. Hopefully we're out of this soon. And we really appreciate your time.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Thank you. Have fun.
All right, Mike. Bruce Valanche. Fantastic guest. You keep trying to
work with him because, I used to write for our first podcast and he's a writer. So I feel pretty level with him.
Yeah, but it's funny because you keep trying to win the Verbal Shenanigans T-shirt, and you have it already. I don't understand what you don't get.
Well, what really disappoint me, I guess the wrong person. I guess Al Snow.
Dyson Knight.
Dang it.
We're going to do that, I think, with the next... I think I'm going to do that with the next few guests. I'm going to do a little guess who we got, and maybe block out faces or put a movie clip up with a hint. And we'll see how it does. We'll see if we get any interaction from you guys out there. But Bruce Valanche, really good guy. Brother, what we got?
I'm going to be doing a marathon this weekend.
All right.
Yeah, it's not an official one. They're still not doing any kind of runs with large groups in there or whatever, but the wife and the neighbor and I are going to a local trail here, and we're gonna try to do 26.2 miles. We gotta get up at the butt crack of dawn to beat that Georgia heat. And, yeah.
Didn't you do a really long race once? Like pretty long?
Like the longest I've done outside was, I did a half marathon, like an official run. The longest run I've done outside has been 20 miles.
Close.
In the inside, I did 24 miles.
Oh, all right.
That was the one where I basically circled my couch.
I still cannot believe you were able to do that.
If anybody's curious, it takes 63 circles in my living room to equate to 1 mile. So multiply that by 24. And that's what I did in the living room that one day.
Dude, psychopath. That's like a prison workout.
Yeah, I even said afterwards, the wife loves doing workouts inside. Like she'll do 5, 10, 15 miles inside if it's raining or super hot and not blink an eye. I'm like, babe, my brain was begging for something.
Yeah.
Like we did when the 20-mile one, we went to like a local school and we circled it, and that gets boring. But when you're in the inside, that, I don't know how it's different, but something in the brain just literally goes, I cannot stand this situation whatsoever.
Oh, it's like a treadmill, man. Like the treadmill is nowhere near as enjoyable, at least like running or a stationary bike as riding outside and actually moving and seeing different things.
I can't even use a treadmill. Like I have tried, like when we once went on vacation and we were doing miles and she saw a small gym. By the way, this was the Christmas hotel I'm talking about where we did this. But in any case, like at 2 miles, I'm like, honey, I gotta stop. There's zero possibility. My brain can't handle this. My leg feels funny trying to do this. Nothing feels right. That, and also there's like a bunch of stuffed Santas in the gym. So.
Yeah.
Which is not even an exaggeration, but I digress.
Well, I mean, if you described a bunch of stuffed Santas and a treadmill in a gym, I would just assume it's your home gym.
Well, we don't have a home gym. And all. It sadly, like as we say it out loud, that sounds like a plot line for like one of the direct-to-DVD home A Home Alone movies. It's like French Stewart comes in through the door and there's a stuffed Santa that goes off of a treadmill and smashes him in the face and he goes, Rah! And then he crashes into his teammates or whatever.
That's almost as good as Moon Jail. No, Space Jail.
Space Jail.
Our movie.
Moon Jail will be the sequel.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. Moon Jail. It's getting closer to Earth. Moon Jail. So yesterday, you hear my dog barking.
Uh-huh.
So as you hear my dog barking at what is probably, he barks every day at this little pug that's like his owner takes him for a walk, and the pug's always wearing like a little dress. So he's always like, it seems like he's a cat calling her. But yesterday,
how's it going?
My neighbor gave me a bone for him. He was like, oh, I went to the local butcher shop and you'd be interested in this like beef bone, you know, with like marrow in it for the dog. I'm like, sure. So we give it to him and he's so excited about it. He takes the bone and he pretends to hide it all over the house. Like he hides it in the corner of the room, but then brushes fake dirt over it with his nose. And then he gets excited and moves it and goes downstairs and puts it in like the other corner of the room and brushes fake dirt over it. Then he brings it onto the couch and he's jamming it into the couch cushions, into the crack in the couch cushions. I'm like, what are you doing, bud? I look up and his nose is bleeding because he was scraping his nose so hard against the bone trying to cover it up that he like scraped skin off the top of his nose.
That's dedication. That's love for his goals in life. You know, he's like, I don't care if I lose my nose. This is worth it. This bone's going in that other corner.
So back to the matter. Are you feel like you're gonna be fine doing this marathon? Is there any preparation you need to do?
I mean, we've done as many runs as we can and all. Like last weekend, we joined up with like a little running group. I did about 4.5 miles on a trail.
I was hoping you were going to say pogo stick or something cool.
No. You will enjoy. Like I thought, like everybody goes the same route in this group. So like I was a little behind somebody, so I kept pushing and pushing and pushing to catch up to this guy. And then like he kind of turned around. And he's like, "So do you know this route?" Like, no. And he's like, oh, I go out on my own and all. I'm an ex-military guy. So
so just being really nice, like, get away from me. Like, please let me.
Well, it wasn't like get away from me, but he's just like, do you know what you're in for right now? Because this is like the off-route nature trail. So
I love that you get like 30 miles deep and you're like, oh, crap. Like, you don't know where you are in the middle of the woods.
Why are these Marines all around us? I don't understand.
Did I just enlist? all right, well, I hope we go. Do you have some kind of weird outfit you're going to wear?
I know my wife will. I'm trying to think if she has, like, each one. She loves her outfits. Like, the one we did last weekend, since it was the Friday was National Donut Day, she had her donut shirt and her donut running.
Is that like a thing? Shirt. Like, it's just like you could buy running outfits for every thing you can think of?
Pretty much, because you figure somebody who's into running is somebody who also is into, like, Star Wars. So there's Star Wars gear. Somebody's into Marvel, so there's Marvel running stuff. It's just infinite. Somebody's making it out there. And
yeah, I don't know when that whole thing started, like, running basically costume. I think it started with, like, those, like, Tough Mudders and things like that. People would dress, like, you know, like, just in tutus and stuff like that. And I think that, like, carried over, like, those kind of things carried over to, like, the normal running world.
Yeah. Like, I'm just going to wear, like, you know, a wife beater, some kind of shorts, and just go at it. And all. I mean, I just got to make sure I got suntan lotion because I burned to a crisp a second that sun comes out.
I have currently the worst sunburn. The other day, I just kind of, like, went out on my kayak and then went for a bike ride, and I must have went, like, just like just, I don't know. I probably put, I had, like, random dots all over me of sunburn. I had sunburn, like, on my back, but then part of my neck. Like, it was zero effort in the sunblock application.
Yeah, when I did the 20-mile run, I got sunburn on the back of my calves, and it's, like, the weirdest feeling when you get it in a place where you're like, I didn't even know the sun could get there.
The worst place to get sunburn is the back of your knee. You ever get sunburn? Like, in the folds of your knee? Like,
I know what you're talking
about. If you've ever fallen asleep, like, in the sun.
I haven't gotten it there, but, yeah, I can tell. Like, I got, like, real sense. Like, the one place I cannot get sunburn is in my armpits and all, because I'm so super sensitive in there. Like once in a while, like, Izzy's, like, looking for the remote control while we're in bed, and she'll accidentally touch my armpit, and it'll just, it's like knee jerk.
That's right. I remember you saying your armpits are like crazy. Like, you said, like, the idea of someone coming up behind you grabbing your armpits gives you, like, mass anxiety.
Oh, yeah. It would literally be turn around, punch the person. It could be Mike Tyson. I'm like, I'm going to get my best punch in because you do not touch Mike Berlew's armpits. I am throwing it out there now. It's like one of those movies where it's like, hey, this guy does better when he's drunk.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. So, like, I feel like I'm in that, like, move, like a Karate Kid movie where it's like I'm getting my butt kicked and they're all laughing, and like one of the guys from my team's like, why don't you touch him in the armpit? And then they do it and I beat the living crap out of them.
Or the opposite, like you're in a fight and you're just like kicking the crap out of someone, they can't figure out how to beat you, and then someone's just like, hit him in the armpit, and then he just tickles you to death and wins the fight, you know?
Yeah, like I'm just frozen for like 10 minutes and all. What just happened?
I don't love people touching my feet. I'm not big on that, but
Have you ever come, like, I guess the word is, have you come close? Has you ever had, like, a girlfriend or something that's like, oh, let me give you a foot massage or something?
Not
like that,
really. Like it my wife likes her feet rubbed, and I'm not a big fan of feet to begin with. But I can never picture myself, like, going for, like, a pedicure, like, having someone, like, lightly, like, not that it probably wouldn't feel good. I bet you it would feel pretty good. I just think I would be very twitchy and, like, kind of like, I don't want to end up kicking the girl in the face, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're basically like a horse. You don't go behind him.
Right.
Because you're just going to get your teeth knocked out.
That's been my motto. I try to be like a horse in life. Berlew, I think before we go, and good luck on your marathon. When is your marathon? You. It's the weekend, right? We still got one more cast before that. Mm-hmm. We haven't visited your fifth grade writing in a long time.
It's been a couple months.
For those of you tuning in, if this is your first show, Berlew came across this journal/writing notebook from his fifth grade, and I guess it must have been like almost like creative writing or journal prompts or something like that, because we've heard some amazing stories from Berlew, like my friend Blackie. That's the one that stands out the most. But Berlew is going to share another one of his amazing stories, and it's a good way to. It's always a good way to end the podcast. Berlew, what do we have on tap today?
Well, before I announce tonight's episode, don't forget Polar Bear Mania.
That was could I forget Polar Bear Mania?
Yeah. Scott, tonight we're going to be telling the tale of Inderella.
Inderella.
Yes.
So not Cinderella.
The one that begins with a C. No. We don't have the copyright for that. This was literally listed as Inderella.
Now, do you think you spelled it wrong, or you just were going for something similar?
No. Now I'm reading like the first paragraph. I think I understand why I called it that. Or
all right. Well, let's not ruin it then, guys. For our listening audience, enjoy Inderella.
Once upon a time in the forest, there lived an Indian named Shanwell.
And wait. Shanwell?
It looks like S-H-A-U-N-E-L. So I'm going with Shanwell.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
The Indian Shanwell.
Okay.
And she lived with her father. Mm. One day, her dad came home and said that she had to live with two stepsisters and a stepmother.
So right now, it sounds like you just literally took the story of Cinderella and changed the girl's name to Shanwell.
Yes. I don't know what was the premise. I'm not sure if I made up the story or if we were given like a title and we had to go with it.
Right.
But
all right. Well, let's continue.
When the stepsisters came, they looked around the teepee because it looked fancy. They were getting hungry, so they asked Sean. So now it's looking like Shawnee down here.
Oh, okay. So her name evolves during the story. I got it.
Yeah, S-H-A-U-N-E-E.
Shawnee.
So they getting hungry, so they asked Shawnee to get some corn and water. Then after they ate, Shawnee showed her sisters and her stepmother what her real mother gave her for her birthday. Necklaces with different colored beads. It's probably not progressing well through time.
No, this is not great. This is not a good one for you. All right.
No, but we'll keep going with it and see where this goes. One sister said, these purple, I can't even make out that word, blue and dark red necklaces are pretty. But Shawnee said, you can't have them. Then her sister said that she is going to keep them if she says so or not. They got into a fight, and then the stepmother slapped Shawnee.
All right.
Wow.
Action. There's action now. All right.
Yeah, we got a full plot here. When the father came home.
Oh, the father's coming in.
That they were working. Shawnee's father and stepmother took her bed, so she had to sleep on the dirt floor. When she woke up, her father said that every day she woke up, she had a monkey face.
I have no idea where this is going. All right, let's go.
Yeah. One of the sisters heard Shawnee's father when her mother woke up and said, do I have a monkey face when I wake up? Her mother wanted to know where she got it from, and she said Shawnee's father. They thought Shawnee wanted to get rid of them. Someone came to tell them about the Indian powwow ball.
The powwow ball!
Yeah. Really progressive here. And as a reminder, I'm 1/32nd Cherokee.
Sure you are.
They all got dressed up, but Shawnee couldn't go until she cleaned the food crumbs off the floor. She found out there was millions of them. Blackbirds came in and cleaned them up, and put them in the pot. But she still couldn't go. I don't know why the blackbirds are putting these breadcrumbs in a pot.
Yeah, yeah.
A fairy godmother came and gave her a dress, glass moccasins, and a carriage, and said she could go to the ball, but she had to be home by midnight. She went to the ball, saw her stepsisters and stepmother, but they didn't recognize her. All four of them danced with Chief Tomahawk.
All four. Really, get it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. This has to be, out of all the stories we read, one, the most random. It sounds like you just really like the Native American stuff and just crammed it into Cinderella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I just like how they say, hey, we need some food. Hey, Shawnee, go get some water and corn.
And then she gets slapped. This is also one of your longer pieces. All right.
Yeah. We still got about a page to go. So wow. Let's see happens here to comes Shawnee Cinderella.
And her pig, at 12 dog o'clock, face. What was it? Pig face? Dog face?
Monkey
face. Monkey face. All right.
At 12 o'clock, he wanted to dance with Cinderella, but she had to run home, and she lost her glass moccasin. In the morning, a man announced that Chief Tomahawk was going moccasin. To try to find the person who the glass moccasin belongs to, and whoever fits it, he will marry. When he came over to Shawnee's house, the first stepsister tried it on, but it wouldn't fit. So her mother gave her a tomahawk and told her to chop it off. I think that's actually part of the real Cinderella story, like in the Grimm Tales, but I digress.
Uh-huh.
Told her to chop off her heel so it could fit. Her other sister saw her, so she tried the moccasin, and it didn't fit her either. Then Shawnee tried it on, and it fits, so Chief Tomahawk married her, and they lived happily ever after. The end.
Wow. The glass tomahawk. I mean,
no, moccasin.
Moccasin.
It's Chief Tomahawk with the glass moccasin going to the teepee to see the monkey face.
You literally just ripped off an entire story and added Native American culture to it, which is just complete.
Yeah. And very horribly, too, might I add. I'm very ashamed of fifth grade Michael Burler.
You know, like in. We were just doing another interview and we were talking about how World Chase Tag was copied by this other show. You literally just did that. You just took whatever whatever you knew. You did the GoBots of you did the Street Sharks, if you will, of Cinderella.
Tonight on Fox after Ultimate Tag.
Cinderella.
Find out the true story of a princess. Daddy, I don't like my stepsisters. Whack!
Wow, we've gotten at least like four or five, maybe six stories out of this. Is there how many are in there?
I think we counted once. I think there's like 12 in here or something like that.
So we've got a couple more in the chamber. These are...
I gotta be honest, I don't think I'll ever top Cinderella.
Cinderella was amazing, and I feel like you should transcribe these and type them so we could put them up on our social media so people could read them word for word. If you ever get like, you know, if you ever get 15 minutes to yourself to like transcribe them, we'll put like, this is a story written by Mike in fifth grade called Cinderella. Please comment.
Tonight, episode 302. Bruce Valanche in Cinderella.
Nah, man. Cinderella and Bruce Valanche.
True.
Well, on that note, another fun night here, Mike. Another great night in the books. Bruce was awesome. Your story was awesome. And we've been having a lot of fun with the podcast lately. We got some stuff in store for you that I think you guys are really going to like. Particularly, we did one on Saturday that me and Mike recorded that I I very much enjoyed, and it was a really cool. Put it this way: if you're in our age group, you might really dig it. So that's coming up pretty soon. So, so yeah, we've been having a lot of fun with the podcast here, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down, which is great. So we will continue to do this. We will continue to read you Indorella and her other saga. Maybe you should write the next part to it, Mike. You know,
yeah. You remember, like, the stepsister has to get revenge for her chopped off heel.
Yeah,
thanks to her mom.
You remember how we had Doug Clifford from Creedence Clearwater? And he found like a tape from 1987 that he was putting out as an album now. Like, it's like there's no reason Indorella can't be like your new thing. You found it, and you got to put it out to the public. So
yeah, maybe take out 3/4 of the racism in it, but
Well, you know, I wouldn't call it racism. You were just a young...
No, at different times. That's the best answer to
just
say.
A young little Mikey in his class just trying to do a right thing. So, Berlo, anything to promote before we get on out of here?
I will promote Hickstown Brewing Company in Billerica, Georgia. They were down for a little while, but they're back now. They have outdoor seating now for social distancing with everything's going on. They're right off the strip here in Billerica. They always have some great beers. And if you're worried about going out, they still have to-go crowlers and growlers for you. Fantastic brews. I've been there plenty of times. Help support them through this. It's Hickstown Brewing Company.
All right. And I will just promote, you know, I'm going to promote ourselves, but I'm also going to promote, I don't know, just because we had two members of Coheed and Cambria on this show a long time ago. Josh Eppert and Travis Stever, and the lead singer Claudio Sanchez, who is one of my favorite musicians. Which one day I think we're gonna have him on the show. I really do. I think that will come to fruition. But he's been putting out new music under his solo stuff under the Prize Fighter Inferno. He just put out a song called Death Rattle, More Than Love, and Crazy for You. And he also did a really great cover of Eddie Money's Take Me Home Tonight. So go check out Prize Fighter Inferno if you're a fan of Coheed and Cambria. And guys, if you like us, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, wherever you can. And most of all, share our show with your friends and leave a comment. And it really helps us out. And go back and listen to some of our recent episodes. 2 episodes ago, we had Butterbean on. An episode ago, we had Dyson Knight of the Baja Men. And they're both really cool interviews. So go check them out. Other than that, guys, that's it, man. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. And see you on Thursday.
Later.
Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can you do the things that I do? I can take you higher.